and welcome back to another exciting episode of the Adventures in Advising podcast. We are at episode 97, just a few episodes away from episode 100. So who is our guest today? Well, that is someone I've gotten to meet at advising conferences and someone who has been a longtime listener of the pod, and that is Leslie Bell from Rust College. Leslie Bell was born and raised in Akron, Ohio. Enrolled at the University of Akron, Leslie struggled academically his first 2 years that included an academic dismissal, but was reinstated and worked his way back to graduating with his Bachelor of Science in Political Science and Criminal Justice with minors in Political Science American Track and Criminal Justice Technology Corrections Track. Leslie is a proud first-generation college student. He also pursued his graduate work at his alma mater and earned his Master of Arts in Higher Education Administration. Leslie's first professional student affairs position was a part-time summer position in 2014 with Kent State University as a clerical specialist researcher. His role was to gather information on diversity, equity, and inclusion and prepare Excel spreadsheets for all its campuses. Leslie was then a student success coach with a third party that was contracted to the University of Akron, where he coached first-year students. In 2017, Leslie was employed with Kansas State University as an academic coaching counselor. Presently, Leslie is an academic advisor retention specialist at Rust College, which consists of advising first-year students who have less than 30 completed credit hours. He works with students who are at risk or who are on academic probation or academic notice. Leslie is a NACADA conference regular, always staying on top of the latest information on advising techniques and adapting to the latest trends. Outside of work, Leslie enjoys walking, watching YouTube and professional wrestling, and reflecting on ways to be a better advocate for well-being, mental health, and self-care. Leslie, welcome to Adventures in Advising.
Thank you very much, Matt.
Leslie, remind me, because I know you've been a longtime listener of the podcast and also, you know, supporter of the podcast. Did we officially meet in person? Was it in Portland in 2022?
It was in Portland in October of 2022.
Ah, gotcha. Yeah, and I'm sure we'll chat about that too with your conference experience. So let's start out, Leslie. Tell us more about your journey into higher education.
Well, my journey in higher education started really after the end of my first undergraduate semester, where I had a GPA of 0.43. I had failed Elements of Math 1. I had failed Intro to Criminal Justice. I had failed English 121, which was the community college version of English Composition 1. I was dismissed academically, but I wrote a strong reinstatement letter, and I was reinstated on academic probation. And it took about another year to get the good standing. And the two classes that really decided that, actually three, my strong showing in Elements of Math 1, Intro to Sociology, where I got a C, and also Intro to Criminal Justice, which I retook, which I got a C in that class because I was pursuing a two-year degree in criminal justice technology at the time. It was well before 2002 when I decided to change majors to go from Political Science America track to Political Science Criminal Justice, where I kept performing well and kept. And then in my contract year at the end of 2006, in December of that year, I graduated with a Bachelor of Science in Political Science Criminal Justice. Because my first higher ed position was in the Ray C. Bliss Institute of Applied Politics as a student employee, gathering research and doing other projects to help advance the role of the institution. And that's at the University of Akron. And for those who don't know, the Bliss Institute is a bipartisan teaching and research institute where anyone can pursue an undergraduate certificate or graduate certificate. There's for those who want to go to graduate school, there is a JD MAP, a Juris Doctorate, and a Master of Applied Politics. You can both get a Master of Applied Politics and a law degree. And there's also the regular Master of Applied Politics. Of course, I got an undergraduate certificate in Applied Politics because I really, really like the research and teaching of the Bliss Institute.
You know, you were talking about, and I appreciate you sharing your story, being on like the dismissal and then getting back in, raising that GPA back up, being successful in graduating.
Do you feel like your story, do you end up working with students where you're able to share that story with them as well?
Yes. And I say to people, I've been in your shoes. But the reason why I performed better was I went to tutoring. I went to the math lab. I went to the writing lab. I went to the study skills center. I took care of myself better for my own mental well-being. I used time management. I was better able to budget my time. I spent longer hours on campus, being able to do the nuts and bolts research of doing a paper, asking questions, going to office hours, meeting with my advisor. They gave me those first steps, but it was my responsibility to take the next step in being able to succeed, not only academically, but also for my own well-being and for my own academic standing. And it all ties back into financial literacy. And if you're going to do well, you got to make sure you graduate in 4 years. But it took me 8 years, and my student loans for on the undergraduate side maxed out in my contract year at the end of 2006, knowing that I was going to be graduating.
Yeah, awesome. And, you know, fast forward to now, you know, you are working at Rust College. You are an academic advisor and retention specialist. Can you tell us more about your role and what that entails?
Sure. In my role at Rust College, I do advising with first-year students who have less than 30 credit hours. These are mostly incoming students. And I've been in that position for almost 2 years. Originally, when I started out, I had a group of students that had certain last names beginning with certain letters in a wide variety of majors through five divisions, because we have about 30 majors in those five divisions. They are consisting of humanities, business, education, science and math, social science. And we work with those students and we ask them a series of questions. And we do I do a lot of holistic and inclusive advising, along with triage and strengths-based advising. Because I really like doing the triage advising. I really enjoy deep diving into what makes a student be successful and what's keeping a student back. And I like to ask those questions, such as, why haven't you been going to class, or why you've been underperforming in this particular subject? And I like talking with that with my students every time I see them on a weekly basis or another part of campus or after one of my college orientation classes. It's all about going into the human condition and understanding where a student is coming from or meeting the student where he or she is at and providing those timely resources in making sure he or she is successful. It's all about timing. You got to get them where they're at immediately or they fall for the cracks.
Yeah, so it's like asking a lot of those open-ended questions and like you're saying, kind of doing that deep dive into finding out more about the student, where they're at, but how to get them back on track if they kind of fall off a little bit with that. Can you tell us a little bit more about Rust College for those who may not know about the institution?
Yeah, sure. Rust College is the oldest historically Black college and university in the state of Mississippi. It's a private institution. It was one of the original HBCUs founded before 1868. And we are part of the Freedmen's Aid Society. It was founded by the Freedmen's Aid Society. And it is part of the United Methodist Church, meaning that we are not part of the United Negro College Fund, the UNCF, and we don't take any money from the state of Mississippi since it's not a state institution that is part of the University of Mississippi Board of Regents. Because we're driven by a student tuition, and that's what drives our revenue. And we tell students that we're a private institution, we're not part of any institution of the state of Mississippi. What we do is provide students with a whole education through cultural, educational, and religious aspects.
Wonderful. Yeah, thank you for sharing that. And I was interested, Leslie, because I know when we were chatting a few months ago, when we're kind of planning out doing this interview for the podcast, you were talking about kind of your journey into becoming an academic advisor and kind of some of the challenges that came up with it. Can you share a little bit more about that?
Certainly. When I graduated with my master's degree in December of 2010, as I knew what I wanted to be, an academic advisor, because my academic advisor had received her master's degree in political science from UA. She's now the chair of the political science department at East Carolina University. And I really saw her in action, knowing what she does. I planned out my courses, and she really agreed with a lot of the courses that I needed to graduate. And that was really what triggered my interest in higher education. I started to pursue a Master of Arts in Political Science, but after a year and a half, it didn't work out. So I met with a lady who used to be an academic advisor in the then College of Education at the time, which is now the LeBron James Family Foundation School of Education. It's part of the Buchtel College of Arts and Sciences now. And she really encouraged me to apply for the higher education program because I didn't have to write a master's thesis. I didn't have to do a statistics class. And looking back now, it was a way better fit for my skill set. And if I had to do it all over again, I probably would have gone with the higher ed program and graduated in 2 years, not spending an extra 2 years being in graduate school. Because there's always time to reflect and second guess yourself. But at times we have to, when we make our own bed, we have to lie in it.
Very much so. Very true. Now, I know one of the topics you were interested in chatting about today was that of neurodivergent. How would you describe neurodivergent?
For me, seeing everything in a layman's terms, it takes longer for me to process all the information and then come up with a rationally sound decision, or coming with the logic behind that decision. I take a lot of time in reviewing everything about two or three times and then coming up with a response. Sometimes when a student emails me about a question, I will come up with that response really quickly, and then I'll deep dive into that question. I like to ask a question, I can answer with another question, but at times I want to give them the entire answer. And when I finish that email, I will ask them, have I answered your question? Sometimes they may be confused on something with an assignment for orientation 111 or orientation 112. And then I will clarify with the response. But they're always, the students in my orientation classes are always open to come to my office or message me on our learning management system, or just come to my office. And if they have a concern about a question running class or a major, I will answer it. And also in a term of neurodivergency, because I do have a mild form of autism spectrum disorder, I still have a great mind, but my mind develops a little more, a little longer in looking at details and looking at materials. Of course, it does take time. It's still hard for people to accept my condition, because there's still a lot of prejudice against those who are neurodivergent. Because I was so happy when I got my official diagnosis nearly 6 years ago, when I was still living in Manhattan, Kansas, at a place called Flint Hills Neuropsychology. Because I took a lot of the basic tests, and I pretty much knew right then and there.
Yeah, and I guess along with that, what do you feel that some people might have misconceptions about with someone who's neurodivergent?
That they're crazy, or they don't know what they're talking about. I just give it to you in plain English, simple, in black and white. Of course, I still grasp with it. It's a condition that's not curable. It's something I have to live with for the remainder of my life. And of course, I have friends of mine who have kids who have autism. It's not easy.
And you were mentioning, you know, like, for example, like the emails and, you know, deep diving and how you respond. Are there any other challenges that you feel like you faced, let's say just maybe in the higher education realm of being an academic advisor in your position?
Yes, because when I'm responding to emails or questions, sometimes my answer is confusing or too long, or sometimes, and a lot of times, I will clarify it to make it more simpler. Yeah, but a lot of times when a student or a colleague of mine is asking me a question, of course, I will assist them in any way they can since I have more experience than my colleagues who we brought on last year. And of course, they're going through it for the first time in terms of teaching orientation classes and having a caseload.
Yeah, and I also kind of just think of in terms of like even the students that we work with, students that might be neurodivergent. I know like our institution just opened up like a neurodivergent office for students to go in and have as a place to be. So I guess like what for your advice to, let's say, advisors working with students, like what would be your advice for advisors working with students who might be neurodivergent?
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Cracking the college admissions code just got easier. I'm Rebecca Gordon, your go-to fictional college admissions counselor for the rich and famous. Tune into The Admissions Game, Satire Edition, and uncover my top secrets for surefire Ivy League admission. Ditch the old Photoshop your face onto a water polo hunk trick. We reveal all the latest loopholes. So laugh and learn with The Admissions Game, wherever you podcast.
Yeah, that question is really a good one. And my advice when we're working with students who are neurodivergent is be open with them. Be sensitive about their feelings. Really work with various offices to provide the best resources. Work with the Neurodiversity Center. Work with the Office of Accessibility. Stay in the loop with those students and even their professors. There are times that the professors will not honor or the request of the students and the accessibility office, because the professors have to be really sensitive about it. And of course, I've had students who have IEPs and 504s, since Rust does not have an official accessibility office, we have to judge it on our own merits, because I will give those accommodations and exceptions for those students. Of course, I'm really sensitive about it since I've been in the shoes of those students.
Well, I guess that leads it to another question based off that answer. So like you were mentioning, Rust doesn't have like, let's say, that accessibility office. So like you would, like, let's say as an advisor, you would determine, let's say, maybe the accommodations. How does that process work? Like, does the student reach out to you and then you have a conversation with the student and then you make the accommodations based off that?
Well, the process when a student comes in is, if a student has an IEP 504, we will review all of that information from those documents and then come up with an IEP 504 plan for the students based on their needs. And then we will, when the student makes his or her schedule, and after that, we will email each of the professors from that student's schedule. And we will email them all at the same time. And we will inform each and every professor, this student needs accommodations for such and such a class like English Composition 2 or Analytical Geometry and Calculus 1. Sometimes the professor will honor it. Sometimes the professor will not. But it's really a case-by-case basis, depending on the professor. Sometimes, or even most of the time, the professor will not honor that request. Because for the first year and a half, I was not only advising students in all five divisions, but also advising IEP 504 students, which I voluntarily gave up towards the end of last semester.
No, but thanks for sharing all of that. I think that's it's very interesting. I know every institution's different on how their process goes. I know, like for our institution I work at, all that will be processed and work with our services to students with disabilities office, and then they'll get in contact with the professor. So kind of same process, like ultimately, like once you review it and reviewing those forms and doing the accommodations. But I wanted to kind of switch gears and, you know, kind of talk more about you outside of Rust College in terms of you at Nakata conferences, because I know that's had an impact on you on like the what you end up learning at those conferences and what you're able to bring back. So talk to me about participating within Nakata and kind of how it's impacted your professional development.
Yeah, because I've been participating. Well, the first time I participated in a Nakata conference when I was still at K-State, I went to the Region 7 conference in Tulsa, Oklahoma in February of 2017. It was my first time getting opportunity to actually go to a Nakata conference, see what it's like, and go to a concurrent session. Because a lot of those sessions I went to involved intersectionality, academic coaching, and a few advising sessions. That's where my first really big opportunity to network. Because those are the chances where you get to hand out your business card and let them know that you're ready to speak with them at any time. And then when I left K-State in May of 2017, because I was working in I was looking for employment, and then I found a Plan B position where I was at for a little over 2 years. Then the pandemic hit, and then a lot of layoffs occurred since my position was deemed non-essential. But I never forgot about Nakata. I kept renewing my membership. I was like partially active at the time in Nakata. Mm-hmm. But when I got to Rust College 2 years ago, I knew what I had to do, knowing that the next conference was going to be in Portland, because I really wanted to go, because I want to learn and get in more insight about what is academic advising in the trenches, not just from an advising student standpoint, but also from a research standpoint, or from an HBCU standpoint, or from an athletic standpoint. Because when I make that decision to go to Portland in October of 2022, I didn't realize what I was getting into, but at the same time, I met a lot of great people and people who were rooting for me to get back into the higher education profession. I met Sally Garner from the University of Oregon. She's still at Oregon. And James Fasulo, who's still at Portland State University. And of course, I've met a lot of people along the way who have supported me. And some of the places I've went to in the sessions, like the HBCU sessions, the academic probation sessions, first gen higher ed advising. And of course, in those takeaways, I pretty much learned a lot about advising and also how they word probation, dismissal, suspension. And I really like the research that's being used by California State University at San Bernardino. They use the term academic notice. And when they use like probation, dismissal, it has a negative stigma, sort of like a dog whistle against underrepresented students such as African Americans, Indigenous students, and Latino students, or should I say Latin students. And a lot of institutions are starting to become more sensitive about it, as I like using the moderate language of notice. And that means when a student falls under a certain GPA before they go into the major, like a 2.0 GPA, we work with them and giving them all the necessary resources that will be key to helping them get back to good standing. And sometimes the students will be on financial aid dismissal. That means that to get financial aid reinstatement, they would have to fill out a student satisfactory academic progress form with all relevant information attached and write a letter explaining why his or her financial aid should be reinstated. And of course, if their financial aid is reinstatement, we limit them to 12 to 13 credit hours with the condition they get back to a 2.0 GPA.
Yeah. And shout out to, you know, to James and Sally. Yeah. Great, great people that I've gotten to meet and work with. And I know James is another great supporter and listener of the podcast as well. And as far as, yeah, the academic notice term and the change to that, for the CSU system, a lot of it actually started with Cal State University Fullerton, where they, from what I believe, they ended up doing a survey to their students and kind of asking them about the terminology and kind of how it made them feel. And then based off that and the research they've done, they went in and switched, changed some of that terminology to academic notice. And then it just seems like from there, a lot of other institutions have followed through. Our institution, we just switched it over actually at the beginning of January of this year. And so, yeah, it was a great process to do that and, you know, to kind of see the change in time in terms of how students react to it, I think has been great as well. And I know Cal State Fullerton has also been able to present on it a few times in webinars. So shout out to Cal State Fullerton too.
Yes, because I still have the PDF article of Fullerton. I said San Bernardino. because Fullerton's was the pioneer.
Uh-huh. Yep. Yeah. So they kind of started it, which is fantastic. And it's kind of led to multiple other institutions, not just within California, but, you know, in various other states. So really kind of think about what kind of terminology do we have and how does this impact the various students that we have at our institutions? Now, you were mentioning, you know, Sally and James and being at conferences. But I know also what's important to you in terms of networking has also been the topic of social media. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Yes. Yes. Social media has really helped us in expanding academic advising. Of course, I'm very active on social media through Twitter/X and also LinkedIn, because I have a strong network of advisors. And of course, the Nakata app, which I've had now for over a year and a half. And I'm still connecting with advisors from all over the country and all over the world, because we all have a common goal, is helping students succeed. The expansion of Facebook and other forms of social media, you know, like TikTok and Snapchat and Instagram. Academic advising and higher education student affairs has evolved. Because I'm very active on social media trying to get our message out. Because sometimes there's a question I may answer, or if it's asked this way, or I may ask a question this way. Because one of the things I still miss is on social media is the academic advising chat on Twitter. Every Tuesday or every other Tuesday, I really loved the academic advising chat, because a lot of us from across the country talk about different topics. And of course, I've moderated a few times. It's really about letting our hair down, talk about the topics in an unfiltered setting. And with that unfiltered setting, we can get more information out, and we can answer questions in such a way that really helps us in our daily profession.
Who knows, maybe that'll start up again at some point, or there'll be some other way through social media or some other social media platform to maybe do something similar to that. And maybe you're the one that spearheads that. But I also want to kind of get your opinion on, or your, you know, your experience, because I know, if I remember correctly from, you know, one of the conversations we had, like, your institution has gone through like an advising restructure. Am I remembering that correctly?
Yes.
Yeah. So how's that process gone, and how do you work through that change while also ensuring that your students, you know, are not negatively impacted through changes that end up happening through a restructure?
Our restructuring was pretty effective towards the end of last semester, because I've mentioned we have the five divisions, and a lot of us took different divisions. I took the division of education. Our advising director has science and math and business. One advisor has humanities, and another advisor has social sciences, because those two gentlemen we brought on towards the end of last summer. And we just brought on a new advisor to our team who was working in campus activities. So we'll have another mini restructuring. He'll have a caseload starting this fall. And of course we have a full advising team of five advisors, including our director. Of course, with minds in education, because there are about seven different programs that a person can graduate with a degree in. And of course, one is early childhood management and associates. Another is childcare management. And of course, there are elementary education, secondary education, business education, English education, math education, and I believe music education, because there are about seven or eight different education degrees a student can receive a degree in education. Of course, they have to complete all the general education requirements, including Algebra 1, Algebra 2, which are both required, English Comp 1, English Comp 2, two classes of college orientation, at least 1 year of academic enrichment program, AEP, and also when they reach their 30th credit hour completed and a 2.0 GPA, they move to the major. And of course, I stay in communication with the administrative assistant for the Division of Education and let them know who's coming over to the major. Of course, I hand over the files, but we review the files first and check off every class they've completed. I turn that file over to the director, and she will review all the information. When that file is ready, she will approve it and ready, and will be sent to the Division of Education. But before all of that, once a student reaches that 30th credit hour of completion, I will send them a congratulatory email to let them know you're moving on to the major, you've completed 30 credit hours. You'll be there in a few weeks, each depending on the review of our staff. And if it's approved, you're ready to go. And then your advising will be done by a Division of Education advisor through the consulting of the Division of Education's administrative assistant. Now, on the other hand, for science and math and business, which I used to advise, we have a tedious process, especially with the biology majors or any STEM major. They would have to do like general biology 1 lecture and lab at the same time, same prof. General biology 2 lecture and lab in semester 2. General chemistry 1, they start in math and algebra 2 in their first semester, and then they move to pre-calculus. And then they move on to calc 1, because the majority of the students who come to Rust College are STEM majors or business majors. And of course, our third largest major is social science. And of course, in humanities, we have music majors now. The music program has been revitalized. And of course, we have education.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
You love listening to podcasts, but have you ever thought about starting your own podcast? Maybe you want to build a brand, grow your business, or are looking for an excuse to talk about your favorite hobby. Whatever your reason for making a podcast, Buzzsprout is the place to start. Since 2009, Buzzsprout has helped over 300,000 people launch their own podcasts. Buzzsprout walks you step by step through the whole process and will give you powerful tools to start, grow, and monetize your podcast. Ready to get started? Click the link in the show notes to get our free step-by-step guide to starting your podcast today.
Kind of going on with advising, you know, you not only are an advisor meeting with students, but you also have taught or teach classes, for example, College Orientation 111 and 112. Can you describe both those classes, kind of the differences?
Yes. I will start with Orientation 111. That is the first semester orientation class required of all of our students. And in that orientation class, we matriculate them into the societal aspects of Rust College through various different topics like campus safety, well-being, study techniques and exam preparation, critical thinking, financial literacy, alumni relations, collegiate vocabulary and school spirit, knowing about a four-year degree plan. Those are a lot of topics to cover an entire 16-week semester. And we let them know that you have to be aware of all of this history, of the history, mission, and vision of Rust College, as well as the different topics that will be related to your future student success as a Rust College student. And of course, we do discussion board assignments and quizzes and with a midterm and a final. And of course, in the second half of the semester, it's mostly guest speakers. I think my favorite part of the Orientation 111 class is usually the campus safety portion, where we get a lot of engagement. And I see that in the discussion board assignments, where students will post a lot about campus safety, and we see a lot of replies. Of course, safety is a big thing right now on college campuses. And of course, students have a midterm and a final. And of course, we teach that class is taught once a week.
Yeah, so definitely it kind of fits within, in being once a week, it can definitely fit within their schedule with all their other classes. And, you know, and then, so you're mentioning the 111. How about the 112 class?
Certainly. College Orientation 112 is way different than 111, where 111 is more about the aspects of college life and knowing how to navigate the different areas of Rust College. 112 is more about career readiness, where it's pretty much dominated by a college portfolio, where they should know how to write a resume, know how to write professional references, have a reference list, how to write a cover letter, how to do an elevator pitch, how to do informational interviewing and job shadowing, and most importantly, how to do a mock interview, which are very important keys to have good financial literacy and leave college with a very moderate amount of student loan debt. Because we want students to have that knowledge and graduate in 4 years and advise to apply for scholarships. So they make sure they don't leave college with a lot of debt. Because both of these orientation classes are well tied back into financial literacy. Because we make a major deal out of financial literacy in these orientation classes. And of course, with 112, because there's more responsibility on the students to complete the assignments on time, with the final portfolio due on exam week. Of course, that's the bulk of the grade. And this is my third semester teaching Orientation 112. Of course, I really love the orientation class on the 112 side, where we really get into the nuts and bolts of how to apply for a job, how to write a resume, how to use professional business cards, because there are about 7 or 8 elements of the portfolio that has to be submitted on exam week. And I make sure, and I tell them this multiple times, it has to be unrestricted or will not be graded.
No, I definitely love that you teach this class and that it's offered at your institution, because, you know, sometimes these are topics in terms of like resume, cover letters, mock interviews, job searches that sometimes students might think about once they're at their senior status and maybe they're a term or two out from graduating. So I'm glad that this is kind of built in sort of from the beginning, that these are things that are important. These are things to really be thinking about throughout your time at the institution. And as we're getting close to time with the podcast here, Leslie, tell me about, you know, what are your thoughts on your future plans in higher ed?
Yeah, yes. And of course, before I tell you that, of course, orientation 111 and 112 is required for graduation.
Even better.
Yes. Yes. So right now I'm in the process of gathering research for potentially writing at least one research paper for a future NACADA conference, whether it be regional or an annual conference. Because just recently I did some abstract evaluations and I did five of them. And it was my first time doing abstract evaluations. So right now I'm starting to take a more active role in NACADA. Mm-hmm. And of course, in early April, we have NACADA elections. And of course, I just re-upped my membership for another year. I did that last week. And my plans for the future are potentially going into a doctoral program, possibly in Doctor of Education or Doctorate of Philosophy program in higher education administration, where I want to like focus my research on academic progression of first-year student athletes or academic progression of students with disabilities, or looking at a group or looking at underrepresented students who are in their first year and are struggling academically. Because I do not know where my research wants to go, whether I want to do a doctor of philosophy with a dissertation, where knowing I might go and do faculty research or write a dissertation in practice with the EDD. Mm-hmm. And I've looked at several doctoral programs, and I won't name them right now because it's all in the process stages, because mm-hmm. I look at each doctoral program based on its own merits. And of course, with the master's degree, I have enough experience now to understand and the expectations of doing a doctoral program while working full time. And because that's a lot more pressure, but it's also, as professional, I have to handle time management. And if I were given a chance to do a doctoral program, and a lot of these more programs are increasingly online, where I won't have to leave an office and just conduct research at night or during the day when the advising period is slow, and just complete assignments. So that's where I'm going at right now, because I can also see myself continuing to working in academic advising with first-year students or working in a different capacity with students in a degree-granting college, because I really like working with students, especially on the first-year side or on academic probation or notice, and really meet them where they're at.
For sure, yes. Yeah. So a lot of great things that I think are coming in your future. And Leslie, since in your bio you mentioned professional wrestling, I feel like I have to ask you this question to end this podcast interview. So we're recording this before WrestleMania 40. That's going to happen in early April. This podcast episode will end up being posted after WrestleMania is done. So let's see if you end up being right on this. You know, Cody Rhodes versus Roman Reigns for the WWE Universal Championship. Do you think Cody Rhodes finishes his story, or will The Rock and Roman Reigns put a story on hold for another year?
I really feel that Cody's going to finish his story this year because he got robbed last year.
Yep, I agree. I definitely hope he wins. I happened to be at WrestleMania 39 at SoFi Stadium last year, and I will tell you, like, I was so ready for him to win, and when he lost, it was like the energy just got sucked out of that stadium, and like a lot of us, you could just hear people just complaining and being so upset that he didn't win. So Yeah, yeah, I agree. I think he's got to win it this year.
Yeah, there's a wild card in that. Mm-hmm. Damian Priest, he still has that Money in the Bank briefcase.
That is true. And he's got to use it at some time.
He might cash in on the world title match, take the title up off of Seth Rollins and Drew McIntyre, or he might go for Roman and Cody, and either one could become a triple threat match.
That is true. So we will see what happens. We'll see if both of us are right when this episode gets posted. But Leslie Bell, thank you so much for being on the podcast. And thank you so much again for being a longtime supporter and listener of the podcast as well.
Thank you, Matt. I'll continue to be listening to the podcast and attending NACADA conferences.